Blog Talk Radio.
Know how much we do appreciate you for the, and we thank you for the support and motivation, because I receive a lot of inboxes and I just thank you guys. And we're Black Free Thinkers. We are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. And that's our mission, to make you just think for yourself, question everything, have a healthy dose of skepticism and a very healthy dose of critical thinking in your life, so that you can move forward in your life and have a happy, productive life and be able to help others as well as yourself. And today, our show is about secrets and pain. But before we get into that, I wanted to make a few announcements. First announcement, our call-in number is 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273. That's the guest call-in number, and if you want to speak with the host, please press 1, and we will get you in there. And we want to thank Mario and Nakomi. They have a show that is every other Friday. They did a show this past Friday on superstition, and they talked about the different superstitions that were out there and gave the origins of some and gave some informational and some insight as to different superstitions that they had, that people in their family believed in, friends believed in. So check out the archives, and they are every other Friday. Their last show was Friday the 13th, and 2 weeks from now they'll have their upcoming show. This next Saturday, Raina Rhodes will be launching her new show, RSS Feed, Reasons, Science, and Skepticism. So that should be a fun time, and we just want to invite you guys out to enjoy her show next Saturday, and more details will be forthcoming. And so today's show, again, is about secrets and pain. And we need to talk about these things, because there have been a lot of incidents forever. I mean, this has been going on for a while, but since the advent of the internet and the technology, and for us to be able to put the information out there and share the information with one another, the covers have been ripped off of a lot of secrets. And we definitely need to address these issues and find out what's happening. And, again, let me define secret for you guys, even though you know what it is, but we'll define it. The adjective, it can be an adjective or a noun, not known or seen, or not meant to be known or seen by others. For example, a secret plan, something that is kept or meant to be kept unknown or unseen by others, a secret state. And so I just wanted to define that real quick so that people will know what we're talking about when we say secrets. And there are quite a few out there, but I just wanted to go over a few things that happened in the news this past week that kind of segues into our subject matter today. And basically, let's talk about Mr. Oscar Perez, Bishop, good and faithful bishop who was convicted of abusing five boys. And I posted that on my wall. And basically, that information is out there. But what is happening? You know, not only do we have this Bishop Oscar Perez, but we had Bishop Eddie Long. We've had Creflo Dollar. We've had a number of people in the news about abuse, different types of abuse, or alleged abuse, if you will. And, you know, they're being convicted. And, again, one of the things that I was taught when I was in the ministry is that we were supposed to cover our leaders and cover the people in the ministry, cover our friends, you know, and family. And when they say cover in religion, it basically means to sweep it under the rug, not to speak of such things. They will tell you to touch not mine anointed. Or in your family, they'll say, you know, don't talk about family. What happens in a family stays in a family. What happens in this house stays in this house. And there's a lot of cover-up. And, you know, with, you know, Bishop Oscar Perez here, all of that information is available out there on the Internet. I posted it on my wall yesterday. So definitely go out and take a look and see what's happening with that. And basically, I'm going to tie that in with Penn State and what's been happening over there. And, you know, Louis Free released a report about the cover-up and the scandal over at Penn State regarding the young boys that were molested by Sandusky. And it's a shame. I mean, he released a list, and this list is basically was created to protect children. The question is, are they going to follow this list? Not only Penn State, but other institutions, because there's a lot of institutional corruption out there, quite a bit of institutional corruption. And with the Penn State situation, they covered all of this, you know, the pedophilia, they covered it to protect their football program and to uphold their image. And so I guess my question is, you know, when nothing happened to Sandusky, you know, when he was not reprimanded by the university, basically, you know, they were pretty silent. You know, someone may or may not have spoken with them. I have not read all of the paperwork. But basically, they pretty much gave him the go-ahead and gave him permission to go ahead and continue to molest these children and to hurt them because there was no action. No action was taken. You know, they wanted to continue to hold the power of their football program, the money that was generated by the football program, the prestige that was given to the university for having a top-notch football program. And, again, you know, I guess my question to you is, you know, where does the buck stop? You know, again, you know, looking at a lot of these different situations, and it seems as though, you know, reporting and exposing these atrocities will seem to be, you know, like a threat to a particular culture, exposing these secrets. Is that a culture threat? You know, maybe someone can help me to understand that. You know, definitely a culture threat to some people. And it needs to be exposed. Too many children and adults, you know, are being abused. It's not only, you know, children that are being abused. There are adults being abused as well. So that's what's been happening with Penn State. There's a lot more to come from that because, you know, not only were they protecting Sandusky, and I'm just not just talking about the Penn State incident. I'm talking about other incidents with other universities and colleges in which the athletes have been accused of abuse of some sort, and that was covered up. Either the young lady or young man or whomever they were basically made to feel as though, you know, they were going to besmirch the reputation of the university and just to keep their mouths quiet, or they were going to hurt that young man's future in his career. And it's been a lot of that happening. We won't even talk about the illiterate athletes that are allowed to pass through these academic institutions because, again, there have been examples of professional athletes who have college degrees that can't read. How do you graduate from college and receive a college diploma and you cannot read? How is that possible? And one of the things that I saw when I was in school, when I was in college, was they had special classes for these athletes. They had classes that were not in a course book. And, of course, none of us could take those classes because it would have been interesting. But in a lot of cases, the accusers are paid off. And, you know, we have quite a few sex offenders in these sports programs. And so, you know, a lot of things, it needs to be addressed. And that's not necessarily pointing the finger at people specifically. It's about, are they receiving the help that they need? Instead of covering it up, why aren't these institutions insisting that these people, these offenders, why aren't they insisting that they go and get some mental health care, that they get some type of rehabilitation? I'm just not understanding this. We have to stop throwing money at these problems because it's like peeling an onion. You have to peel it one layer at a time in order to get to the root cause. And if we never get to the root cause, it will continue to perpetuate itself. And that's the reason why when I see Sandusky and, you know, with the denial, and it just makes me wonder if he was abused as a child also. It's just interesting. There was another news story in which a gentleman was arrested for having relations with a teddy bear. And I'm like, yeah, some childhood trauma coming up in that particular news story. I just found the whole thing interesting. But, yeah, definitely, we need to check these things out. Another story that was in the news this past week was the Wells Fargo, you know, Wells Fargo Bank as well as Barclays. And we need to keep an eye on those stories. But Wells Fargo had to settle a very large racial discrimination lawsuit because basically they were redlining different areas. They were steering minority borrowers to higher interest loans, to adjustable rate mortgages, to the balloon mortgages. It was just they had to go back and they had to pay them for, you know, the injustice there. Now, I guess my question is, what exactly are we going to do about that? Because what has happened in our community really in the past 20 years, we are in worse shape now than we were in the 60s. And what are we going to do about that? You know, I know quite a few people who sold the homes they were living in that were paid off or almost paid off to move into newer homes with, you know, the adjustable rate mortgage, with the ARM loans. And, you know, I was speaking with them about that even then. And basically they told me, oh, we're going to flip the house in a couple of years. You know, everybody thought that they were going to be a real estate mogul, if you will. And those same people ended up losing their homes and in some cases losing their cars because they lost their jobs or they could not afford the new mortgage rate. I mean, initially when they received the loan, their mortgage may have been, you know, $600-$700. But as soon as that, you know, stipulated period ended, their mortgages went up to $1,800-$1,900, which they could not afford. So they ended up losing everything. I've seen some older people who went in and refinanced their loans. There's been some news articles about this most recently, about how those, I forget, reverse mortgages, that's what they're called. And, you know, we have older people now losing their homes. There have been petitions. There have been stories about, you know, 80, 90, 100-year-old, you know, adults, elders, or seniors losing their homes. And the people petitioned and the banks kind of rolled it back so that they wouldn't put these people out of their homes. But in some cases, it was a secret. You know, the one young lady or older woman that was in Detroit, her son, you know, her 80-something-year-old son put her in that predicament, put her in that position. And basically, you know, he said he made a mistake, but he was hiding, covering up what he did. He was hiding the notifications that came in from the mortgage company. He was not telling his mother what was happening. And then when the sheriff was supposed to come in to evict them, he ran and he hid. He hid. And he was, you know, he was very cowardly in that particular situation. And here we go. We have a 100-something-year-old woman on the news crying because she's losing the home, the only home she's ever known. You know, so again, some secrets, there was some pain there. And, you know, these are things that we have to talk about because I've just seen people out here definitely, you know, trying to hide and cover things. And it's easier if you just put it out in the open. Another story this week, and oh, yeah, definitely, I want to hit that Wells Fargo story a little bit more. I had some religious friends of mine tell me that God told them that they were supposed to have this house, or they were supposed to get a house like a lot of the other people in the church. Again, you know, it's about keeping up with the Joneses for some people. And, you know, one of the closely held, you know, secrets, really it's an open secret, is in some of these cases, the pastor's wife or some of the pastor's cronies, they were realtors, mortgage brokers, all of these things, and they were making the commission and making money off of these people, you know, buying these homes and financing and mortgaging these homes. And in many cases, the pastor would say they are endorsing this individual or this company here, and a lot of people don't realize and do not know that some of these pastors were receiving a payoff. They were receiving either a percentage or just a fee. And so that is the reason why they were endorsing some of these people. That's another one of the cover-ups and, you know, another secret that definitely needs to be exposed. And in addition to that, you know, again, some of these pastors are hirelings. And some of them are, you know, rather intelligent in a certain respect, in which they knew that Bill Clinton had deregulated the mortgage industry to make it easier and more viable for minorities to receive these loans. And so what they did is they played off of that and told their congregation that God wants to put you in a home. But go over here and talk to brother so-and-so or talk to, you know, first lady so-and-so after service, and they can help you with these things. So they were being enriched. They were being enriched by other people's ignorance. And when I say ignorance, I'm saying lack of knowledge. I'm not saying that you were dumb or stupid or anything like that. Don't take it that way. I'm just saying that it was a total lack of knowledge. Many of these people did not understand the papers that they were signing. You know, we have a lot of functional illiterates in our community, and there are people who are highly literate in our community that they don't understand the paperwork. And I understand that. There are many lawyers that do not understand the legalese in a lot of these, you know, contracts. So don't feel bad about that, you know. And, you know, again, look at the shape of our community now. This has set us back. We have a lot of people out here blaming Bush for these issues, and he did play a part. You know, I'm not going to give him a pass or excuse him, but it was Bill Clinton who deregulated the mortgage industry. So let's just put it where it belongs, because definitely, you know, there's more to this than what meets the eye. And so, you know, again, this type of thing definitely needs to be exposed and talked about. Let's talk about Jesse Jackson this week. I made a note on my wall yesterday in which I posted an article in which his mother said that he has been experiencing great disappointments, basically, in the past, you know, several years, in which he was not able to, you know, run, be appointed senator. He was not able to run for mayor of Chicago, so he's been extremely, extremely disappointed. And I guess my question is, he comes from a family of wealth. He comes from a family of great wealth. I'm not understanding what this disappointment is. There are many of us. I mean, I want to be the Queen of England, but I don't believe that's ever going to happen. But, again, it's about putting, you know, your best foot forward. It's about moving on and living your life. And, you know, again, it came out that he was an FBI informant. He was shunned. And he pretty much killed his own legacy. He's pretty much killed his own career. He was doing these things to protect his image, protect the image of his family. He was involved with the Blagojevich scandal, which he's serving 14 years, I believe it's 14 years, in the federal penitentiary. And again, you know, there were rumors, scuttlebutt, that Jesse Jackson Jr. was abusing alcohol. And I just find it interesting, and I find it rather ironic, considering that their family owns a large liquor distributorship here in the city of Chicago. They're supplying liquor to a number of establishments and institutions in Chicago. It's interesting. But in addition to that, all of this took place after Jesse Jackson led marches through some of the economically and educationally disadvantaged neighborhoods against Anheuser-Busch. And mysteriously, that all disappeared after they got their distributorship. So, interesting, like I say, follow the money, follow the stories, read up on this yourself. A lot of this stuff has been covered up. But, you know, hey, as Jesse Jackson says, keep hope alive. Maybe they should tell that to their son. But the only hope that I see in all of that situation is that they're hoping that you don't catch on to what's really going on, because these people are definitely being paid off. However, I hope they can take this situation to and take this opportunity to educate the community about mental health care and addiction and abuse and things of this nature, because it's sorely needed in our community. So, again, it's just the whole thing is interesting. A bunch of different cover-ups, a bunch of things happening besides, you know, the issues that are going on in our own personal families. You know, we've all had situations in which the family will say, oh, well, let's just keep that in the family, or they don't want you to tell other people in the family. And that's the interesting thing as well to me. They don't want you telling what's happened to them to family, but it's okay for you to tell friends and, you know, associates or what have you. And so it's just interesting. Someone in the chat room said that, you know, the pressure his parents may have placed on him to be successful is in itself a travesty emotionally. That was from Dr. Bev. And the thing is that, you know, yes, I'm sure there was a lot of pressure from his family, and not only from his family, but from the community as well, because, again, we have to not only look at, you know, that inside influence, but the outside influence as well. You know, community pressure, community expectations. I guess my question is, do they really feel as though they need to live up to the expectations of the community? And if not, then why does the community continue to support them? And it's just interesting, because it seems as though in a lot of minority communities that there is selective memory, short-term memory issues, and people will mistreat us. People will abuse us. People will hurt us. People will pretty much give us their butts to kiss. And then they sit back and they wait and they allow for, you know, the uproar to die down. And then they come back and they do it again. And it's just a perpetual cycle, and it's something that we definitely need to address. Oh, one other thing that I want to tell you guys, please go and register to vote. I went to renew my ID this past weekend, and I had a hard time renewing mine. As a matter of fact, I still haven't gotten it renewed. I'm going to try it again this week. But they have lists of identification and information that you need in order to renew your driver's license or your state IDs. And they really are giving people a hard time. And at the same time that you're renewing your ID or getting the tags for your car, you can register to vote. Make sure you're registered to vote at your current address, because they're doing everything they can to purge these voter lists. It's a lot of this information, again, more cover-up, more cover-up, more cover-up. And, you know, again, at the end of the day, it will be minority communities that suffer the most. So, you know, I'm just kind of giving you all a little heads up. You know, it really is getting more difficult, and they are placing more obstacles in our way. So definitely go out, register to vote. I'm not saying who to vote for. I'm not saying who to vote against. I'm just saying vote. So, you know, those are some of the stories that I definitely wanted to, you know, talk about and, you know, address. And we definitely, you know, we need to get better at this. We need to talk about the issues that are happening out here. And, you know, it just needs to be addressed We can't continue on like this. I actually want to read a quote by J.A. Rogers, Joel Augustus Rogers, and someone posted this the other day, but I thought it was very apropos. And the quote goes as, "To enslave a man, then dope him to make him content. Do you call that a solace? The honest fact is that the greatest hindrance to the progress of the Negro is that same dope that was shot into him during slavery. The slogan of the Negro devotee is, take the world, but give me Jesus, and the white man strikes an eager bargain with him. Another fact, there are far too many Negro preachers. Religion is the most fruitful medium for exploiting this already exploited group. As I said, the majority of the sharpers who among the whites would go into other fields, going, in this case, to the ministry." So I just wanted to share that with you guys today. That was from his book, From Superman to Man. And again, his name is Joel Augustus Rogers. And I just thought that was kind of apropos because, again, you know, you will hear people say, you know, take the world, but give me Jesus. You'll hear different families and see different families, especially in mine and a few others that I know of. They want you to go into ministry. They want you to go into ministry. They want you to be heralded as this great minister. It's just interesting. But let's just get into the subject matter. Let's get into the subject matter today. We're talking about secrets and pain. And when I put out the leaderboard earlier, the first part of it was, are family secrets meant to protect us or hurt the image of family? Do they owe us an explanation, or is it none of our business what happened in the past? And not only what happened in the past, but what is currently happening. Because, you know, it wasn't just secrets back then. Many families have secrets now. And definitely it needs to be addressed. It needs to be, you know, exposed. Because who is it hurting? It's hurting us. It's hurting the current generation. It hurt past generations. And it's going to hurt the subsequent generations as well with all of these secrets. Because in many cases, you know, there are some behaviors and some illnesses that are allowed to continue. And in some of these people, I mean, you know, again, I talked about, you know, a crazy uncle in my family that people know to not leave their children around. As a matter of fact, not only the children, in some cases, you know, he was not allowed to be around certain women in our family. He didn't care. And let's just say some of the young men in our family had a nice little chat with him. And that is not particularly an issue now. And so, you know, definitely these things need to be addressed. Our guest call-in number is 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273. And we have a caller on the line from area code 208. 208, are you there?
Yes, hi. My name is Slav Dean from New York City. Excellent topic. I very much appreciate this forum.
Oh, well, welcome. Welcome. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you. Very good.
Yes, sir.
Hope you're well.
Thank you so much. So do you have anything, some input for us today?
Sure, sure. I know that I believe you say free thinkers. We equate that with atheism or at least not adhering to dogma. I know there's another black male, the atheist guy, and sometimes I listen, the infidel guy, perhaps you've heard of him, and I listen to him sometimes. But yeah, I think that, as you said, we're as sick as, rule of thumb, you're as sick as the secrets you keep. I mean, and one of the reasons that a lot of people turn to drugs and such is because they have what they call, you know, repressed emotions. You know, they have these guilt, saddled with a lot of guilt and shame. You know, they say, you know, you can't, you know, excuse the term, but you can't save your ass and your face at the same time. Sometimes you really need to get down and really talk about and emote and discuss and resolve those issues, that trauma and that pain. You can't sweep it under the rug. Metaphorically speaking, you sweep it under the rug, that doesn't, you still smell a stink in the house, but you just don't see it. But it's still getting, the stink is getting worse and worse and worse, right? Metaphorically speaking.
Exactly.
Talk to me.
But nobody sleeps under their own arms. You know, they don't think it's them. They think it's everybody else. But anyway, go ahead.
Yes, Lord.
Not me. It's all other folks out there.
And then you have people that put on cologne and underarm without even taking a bath. You got to really cleanse yourself. That makes it even worse. Lord have mercy. She said, oh, I don't smell good. I'll go in and put some underarm deodorant on. You didn't take a bath? No, no. That didn't solve the problem.
No, it didn't solve the problem, but it drove the rest of us nuts. Cause we need somebody,
Lord
have mercy. You know, poor baby. Pulling the baby over. Everybody looking down the baby's diaper like, what did you do? So it's just, you know, the whole thing is interesting. But, yeah, definitely, and we've been taught to sweep it under the, you know, under the carpet, sweep it under the rug. We've been taught, well, let's just ignore it. You know, they don't want to address the issues, and they want to ignore it. And that's the reason why, and you're correct. You know, it turns into like a volcanic situation, and the pressure is building up, and it's building up, and it's building up, until one day that person explodes. So whether they explode in anger or rage, or they try to cover the pain or soothe the pain with alcohol, you know, you have drug and alcohol abuse, and in some cases you have physical abuse. You know, and I believe, you know, a lot of the mental health issues that, you know, is rising in our community. You know, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, any type of, you know, food disorder, that's rising in our community. It's always been there, but it's been covered up. You know, the families were embarrassed by, you know, having someone in the family that has some type of mental illness. They've been embarrassed by people who had drug and alcohol addictions and issues. And I'm glad that they are now categorizing drug and alcohol addiction as a health issue. You know, so we're changing the designation on that. But yeah, you know, this helps to produce and I believe cultivate and foster those types of behaviors. And it's just, it's amazing. We can fix these things. We can address it and we can fix them. I mean, the person has to fix it themselves. They have to want to take the medicine. They have to want to go to treatment. They have to want to get better. But we have to get rid of these stigmas. And by having these stigmas in our community, it does not make people want to be honest and upfront and forthcoming about different issues in their, you know, in their lives. But go ahead.
No, again, we're so simpatico because this is where, at one point, religion, because that was all that was allowed to us as an organization, at one time, religious leaders were the only liaison between us and the white power structure. You know, we had to go through them to get anything, any grievances addressed. But now we can establish other institutions that are more rational, because at some point, religion really gives false solutions to real problems. So therefore, it's obscurantism. So therefore, we have people magical thinking, resorting to magical thinking. Religion also locus of control. I don't believe in myself when the issue is really me not believing in myself, my self-efficacy, lack of you know, self-determination, a lack of belief in my ability to be a change agent. Therefore, I'm praying to God, and we have this practice in the black community. Anytime that something gets really bad, we just turn it over to the Lord. Where other groups of people, they go to school, they study science, they become empiricism, you know, the scientific method. They become proactive. They're changing. They're looking for empowerment. We're looking to disempower ourselves. That behavior, behaviorally, you know, cognitive behavioral, we disempower ourselves by going to church when we should be reading probably, you know, instead of praying that my car get fixed, maybe I should learn how to fix it. But then again, if I don't believe in myself, if I don't believe in myself, the locus of control is that I'm a no good in, I'm a no good woman. I've been told all my life that you're no good. You're like your deadbeat dad. You're like your terrible father. You've been molested or raped. You begin to feel as though you're worthless. So even if I give you the tools to achieve, you're not going to, like Carter G. Wilson talking about the miseducation of the Negro. You'll find that even if they give you the front door, you'll create a back door to go through because you've now been in condition to be an underachiever, to be a failure. So that's, you know, we talk about even if that's tantamount to ideologically, psychologically, spiritually, if you will, whatever, you know, putting on deodorant when you haven't taken a bath. We really have to get naked and look at ourselves and do a great deal of healing. And it's not just information, because you can give people the information. I know people have all the right information. I know people have PhDs who still are religious. How can you reconcile being a person with a PhD in physics with still believing in God? How can you reconcile that when you know about radiocarbonating, how old humanity is, how old the world is, 4.5 billion years, but you're going to say that, no, I believe the world is several thousand years old because the Bible tells me. How can you reconcile cognitive dissonance? That's insanity.
Exactly.
Talk to me, sister.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And, you know, and you're right. You know, when you're constantly being told that you're the problem, that it's your fault, that you're bad, that you're ignorant and you're stupid, and, you know, you start to believe those things, but in addition to that, they start to project it. And I've heard some women, you know, tell their children, well, you ain't F, and you're never going to be F, and, you know, and those kids, and I've seen, you know, just the pain come across their faces. You know, I remember I was out and I was picking up something to eat, and this young lady was in the restaurant with her friend and her daughter, and her little girl had walked off to the side. She didn't walk too far, and this restaurant was really small. It was one of those dots, you know, you walk in, pick it up, and leave. And she called her daughter. She called her daughter the B word and come over here, B, blah, blah, blah. I couldn't take it. I personally couldn't handle it. And I said, why are you talking to that baby like that? And she's like, it's my baby, you know, I gave birth to her. That's not what she said, but I'm cleaning it up. She said, I gave birth to that baby, and I can call her whatever I want. And I said, no, you are hurting that child. Don't talk to her like that. And she said, well, my mother talked to me like that. And I said, yeah, and that's why you are the way that you are now.
Talk
and I said, you want to make some changes. Stop now. Do not talk to that baby. You know, and I looked at that baby, and I almost wanted to cry, but I just took my thing and I left. But before I left, I told her, if I see her again and I hear that she's talking to that baby in the same way, I'm going to call DCFS on her because it makes no sense. It definitely makes no sense. And, you know, it's happening quite a bit in our community, and we definitely need to address it. It's just, it's crazy. You know, we have Mario on the line with us, but, yeah, you know, you're right. And, I mean, I'm sure you've experienced that, you know, here. And it's just, it's amazing because when you call them out on it, you know, they want to make it seem as though you're the one with the problem, but you're right on point.
That's gaslighting. You know, it's not, you know, even if we have a valid indignation, righteous indignation about that behavior, they want to redirect the focus away from the reality of what they're actually doing to our reaction to what they're doing. It's like, you know, white supremacists will say, calling you a racist for complaining about racism. That's irrational. It's the same principle, isn't it? It's the same irrational principle.
Exactly. You're absolutely correct. And it happens all the time. And, you know, another interesting part is the victim is blamed. They blame the victim, not the perpetrator. And, again, that goes to continue to create even more secrets because that person is less apt to repeat future, you know, injustices. But in addition to that, that person is used as an example. I've seen this, you know, in my family. I've seen this in the community. I've seen this in churches. And now that person serves as an example, as a warning to other people. Do not report this because no one is going to believe you. And it lays the groundwork for other people to come in and abuse that individual. It's just, you know, it's sad. It's sad. And we have to do that. But as you said, you know, people that we that have all the information that they could possibly need, but yet they ignore it. Why do you think that is?
I think it has a lot to do with, again, that cognitive dissonance, you know, that learning to reconcile those two realities where I think it has to do with laziness. It has to do with tradition. Again, that cognitive behavioral, I think we've had to do that, particularly as black people having to living in a schizophrenic society that's, you know, telling us that this is a free society, yet we had discrimination and slavery. So we had to compartmentalize ourselves. A lot of people do that. You know, in society, you know, how you are at work, and, you know, we hear the tradition about black people, you know, who live like the devil all week and then go to church on Sunday. You know, so that compartmentalization was a survival mechanism, but the healthy ego, a healthy person, is one who reconciles all those compartments and be more reality-based. That's the goal of mental health, is to be reality. The healthy ego is the general of the psyche, is to be reality-based. So you have this kind of fragmentation, this splitting of our psyche. So I can go to church and I can do these things and I can do all these other things, but yet, you know, I'm still fragmented. So I'm like dispersed. All my behaviors are dispersed. I'm like a chameleon. And that's what we had to do in order to survive. But even as, you know, you heard, Joy DeGlue earlier, who wanted to introduce that diagnosis of post-traumatic slave disorder, at one time under that extreme duress, that was adapted to our condition. But we're not under those conditions anymore. We don't have to be fragmented and be chameleons. We can try to integrate our psyches so that we can be healthy and be genuine and authentic, because we're not. You know, you see people, like you said, that we're doing all kinds of things, all kinds of behaviors, but, you know, you don't know who that person is going to be from one day to the next, because they're just showing a side. So the worst thing is not to lie to other people. The worst thing is that we begin to lie to ourselves. That's the worst kind of dishonesty. And then you have people just basically being dishonest with self. But again, that's being engendered within the culture, a maladaptive way now of trying to adapt. That may sound like a paradox, but that's basically what it is, a maladaptive way of adapting.
Exactly. Let's pull 727 into the conversation. We have another caller on the line. Let's see here. 727, may we ask you to call?
727 is here. This is Dr. Bev, Madam Chairperson. What a wonderful topic. Fabulous topic. I'm just loving it. And the gentleman that spoke before, whenever, you know, I hear that nonsense about black men not being educated, not being able to express their ideas, this gentleman put it forth. And, bruh, I just want to say, you laid it down on the ground, baby. I am so happy.
Thank you very much. You're very kind.
It just feels wonderful to hear this kind of intelligence. But, you know, that's what we get on your show, right, Kim? You bring it to us straight, raw, and real, so that us free thinkers who think alike, we have a forum to talk about. And one of the things that I wanted to touch on was one of the things that the gentleman brought up, and it was about gaslighting. Some of you may know I'm a Gestalt psychotherapist, and so the emotions is something that fascinates me. I'm a geek about it. If you go to my blog on Dr. Bev Mental Health, .com, you will see a blog, and the name of the blog is what I call Jesse Jackson's mother. In the chat room, I call it Captain Save a Ho, but we're going to move away from that. Anyway, the title of my blog is What Don't Hate the Player, Hate the Game, A Narcissistic Mother. Most people don't know what that is, and you used one of the phrases and one of the definitions of what it is to be a narcissistic mother, and this goes for fathers as well. I want to be an equal opportunist here, okay? And gaslighting, as you pointed out, and I just wanted to give it a more clinical kind of ambiance so that people can really get it, okay? Gaslighting is a... it's a form of invalidation. It's called gaslighting, which is a subtle form of abuse, emotional abuse, that causes the victim, be it a child or an adult, but usually, as you said when you were speaking, it begins in childhood. It begins in that example that Kim gave about the mother calling her daughter the B word. I'm glad it was Kim and not me, because, see, I want to knock her down. I would have been on DCF right then, because she has. But anyway, let me get back to my point. I digress. Gaslighting is a form of abuse where the child or the adult begins to question their own sense of reality. And no matter what memories or emotions that you can bring up, that mother, that father, that culture, like the other example Kim used was, the crazy uncle. You know, they had to sit him down and talk to him. Really? Really? Well, I bet all those people that he touched or was inappropriate with, their emotions, their memories are still there. But because he's been sat down and talked to, well, you know what that does? That invalidates the emotions and the experiences of those people who he was inappropriate with. And
but
those emotions stick with us.
I guess my question is, how does it invalidate, you know, their emotions and their feelings? because no one, you know, no one necessarily told them that what happened that they shouldn't tell. I mean, because this is how it got around the family. It's just that no one necessarily addressed that particular uncle. It had to take some of the younger men in the family who, what you say, have some real special words for him. Because, you know, he was crazy, but he wasn't crazy that crazy. I'll just put it that way.
Exactly.
And they got to have a chat with him. But, it, you know, them having a chat with him was to stop the behavior. Because, you know, in addition to other women in the family, he has girlfriends. So we wanted to make sure that, you know, these type of incidents weren't happening with his own children, because we just believe he was one of those people that just did not care who it was, you know, male or female, to be honest. And so it was just, you know, interesting, that whole situation. But, yeah, you know, so his family secrets out there. And, you know, we talked about quite a bit of different things, but illiteracy. We have a lot of functional illiterates in our community as well. And there are articles out there showing the link from illiteracy to incarceration. And they determined the number of prison cells and prison beds based on illiteracy rate. And that's another thing. So I've had relatives, you know, only one generation removed that cannot read. I mean, I have people in my family younger than me that is very questioning. And I'm like, you know, what's happening? Why are they passing these children through these school systems? As a matter of fact, I posted an article about the ACLU suing a school district in Detroit because of the illiteracy rate. And so,
and tracking. Yes, and tracking the students. Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to point out, if I may, when I say dismiss their emotions, and what I'm talking about, especially for children and or adults, is this. Yes, and this is just only one example. I mean, this happens all across the board in many families, okay? I'm just thankful that you gave us an example to use, okay? And that is, if this person, the adult person, was sat down and he was talked to, did the other family members, and this is just not for your family, but just across the board, what I found as a psychotherapist is they may corner Uncle Joe or, and ladies, I want to put it out there that women can rape as well.
That's right.
Women can be inappropriate with children as well. So let's not just make it a male thing. But do the children, this is where I come in, where the children or the adults are left emotionally abused because they don't get to talk about their side. They don't get to talk about their emotions, what's going on with them. And that is real important. If we're going to talk about secrets, let's carry the story all the way out.
Right.
Okay? Because we all have to talk about it, whether we're talking about it at a sixth grade level or we're talking about it at a master's degree level. It doesn't matter to me. Emotions are all of us. And all of us have feelings. And all of our feelings should be that I want them to be validated. We should be able to talk about what's happening and what's going on in our families. And as the gentleman brought up, gaslighting, that's only one of the phrases, you know, that those labels. I like to talk about the emotions, but I want to give it labels so that I can give people that education, that knowledge, so that you can go back and look at this. There are two movies that come to mind when I think about secrets and when I think about the shame. And one is an old movie called Mommy Dearest. Okay? That's on one end of the spectrum. But then I want to talk about, I don't really want to talk about, but just mention the movie Precious.
Okay.
Those are two examples where, again, the church, sex, secrets, lies, all come into play.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, and, again, you know, those are very good examples. I mean, Precious, you know, that was, you know, I still to this day, I have not seen that movie. And I cannot bring myself to watch that movie for a number of different reasons. But another example of the abuse. Let's bring another caller into the conversation. Area code 321, may we ask who's calling?
321? Yes, this is William. Am I coming through, please?
I'm William.
Hello, this is William.
Oh, William, I'm sorry, dear.
Hello?
All right, William. Am I
coming through here? I'm under,
you're kind of coming through. You're
cutting
up a little bit.
I don't know if it's clear.
Okay.
I'm going to try to call the answer number to see if it's clear. All right.
Okay, William, it sounds like you're underwater. I don't know if you're on a Bluetooth. If you take yourself off of Bluetooth, we'll be able to hear you. Are you there? Oh, William dropped. Sorry, William. All right. Well, you know, still call back. But, yeah, definitely, you know, you have different movements like this that are examples. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm listening.
Yes, sir.
I chime in a minute or two.
Yes, definitely. But, I mean, there are a lot of things that definitely need to be addressed, you know. And we, in our families, and us as individuals, we need to stop lying about life. Stop selling dreams to children and to each other. You know, again, going back to what you were talking about with the magical thinking. You know, I was out earlier today on my way home listening to the radio station, and they play gospel music up until 12 o'clock. And, you know, I'll be the first one to admit that I do enjoy still some gospel music by certain artists. But I'm listening to the words, and they're always talking about God is going to turn something around for you, or you're next in line for a miracle, or, you know, things of that nature. So, you know, there's a lot of depression. So I guess my question, in general, is the black community depressed?
What my answer, if I may?
Sure.
This is 727. This is Dr. Bev again. I would say yes. As a culture, not only are we depressed, we're schizophrenic. And what I mean by schizophrenic is that, you know, historically we've had to live our life on this side, being one person, and then, you know, going to the other side and being another person. When you have to gel that together in your brain, it gets very, very confusing. And what happens is, again, I'm back to that emotional abuse. Whether you're an adult survivor of a dysfunctional family or you're an emotionally abused child yourself and you happen to, by some ways or means, be listening to this program, hear this, that these people are left confused with anxiety, feelings of abandonment that carry over into their intimate relationships. And this is where it becomes important. And not only does it carry over into their intimate relationships, it also carries over into the inner psychological thought processes and perceptions and feelings of self-love and their own self-worth, which the gentleman was talking about earlier. I mean, our daughters, you know, especially when I think about the church, you know, the first person that comes to mind is, what's the guy who slapped his daughter and then...
Creflo Dollar, I believe it was. Creflo Dollar.
That's another perfect example of where his daughters are being taught social behaviors, okay, about themselves, about whether they're wives or girlfriends or friends, but their own mother didn't even stand up for them, okay? This is going to carry over. We talked about earlier, you mentioned drugs and alcohol. You know, all of that is a way to self-soothe. It's a way to self-medicate. And I do believe that as a culture, yes, we are depressed. As a culture, we have some schizophrenic behavior, which is why I'm a psychotherapist. I'm very passionate about it. And I believe that the healthier you are emotionally, it's going to be better for everyone around you.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And, you know, I always go into the why of these situations as far as family secrets. And why is it a secret? Why is it swept under the rug? Why is it not addressed and ignored? And I just came up with, you know, a few different examples. Shame. You know, the parent or the individual, either they feel ashamed of what happened or the perpetrator shames them. into feeling as though no one is going to believe them, or they brought it on themselves, or they were, you know, a bad person. And that kind of ties into the magical thinking, you know, that the young man was talking about, the magical thinking, because...
Well, I'm 50 years old. I just turned 50, so I'm not as young as I used to be. July 12th, I just turned 50. And Bill Cosby's the same birthday, and Julius Caesar, too, so I guess I'm in good company.
There you go. There you go. There you go. Exactly. And, you know, definitely. But, yeah, it's the shame. It's definitely, you know, shame and then also guilt. But, again, they're taught these things, again, that are religious. They are taught that, you know, with some of the Bible stories, it's taught to them that it's the victim's fault. And they are constantly being victimized. You know, going back to the Pueblo Dollar situations where, you know, it was bad enough that the young lady had to deal with that situation with her father. But in addition to that, now she has to deal with the congregation, because I've been a member of several different churches as a child as well as an adult, and I know how some of the people in the church can be. So I know that many of them are, you know, ostracizing her, shunning her, making, you know, little remarks and snide about the situation, blaming her. Not only does she have a obligation because of who her father is, she has the entire world pretty much as an international minister.
I just want to make a comment. I just want to say also that I'm a licensed social worker. I'm an LMSW, and I have 3 master's degrees in social policy and industrial organizational psychology, and I taught social policy at Empire State College as an adjunct in SUNY Empire State College in Brooklyn, New York. But, you know, that's my background in substance abuse treatment and counseling. And I'm familiar with, you know, Fritz Perls and Gestalt, which is more holistic. I didn't take any postgraduate work in that, but obviously you have. But in any case, what you say is that when we deal with these situations, you know, intergenerational trauma, and on a micro level, we deal with reality on 3 levels, micro, macro, meso, and macro. And in the micro level, if we try to escape it within the confines of our family and haven't been so totally destroyed, and we still have a sense of self-efficacy and perhaps that we can find some alternative, we haven't been so destroyed, like the hopelessness syndrome. You know, if you abuse a dog enough and administer shocks to it, eventually the dog won't even move. It'll just sit there while you shock it. So you have people in our communities who have been subject to that helplessness syndrome. Then you go to the meso level, which is the small group, you know, perhaps in your church, and you find the same response, that invalidating, derogating response. You know, shame is I did something wrong, and guilt is that I am wrong. You know, so it gets to the point where it's no longer just situational. It becomes that I am something bad myself. You begin to internalize. Then you go on the macro level, and it's being reinforced, this toxic perception of you on the policy level and virtually everywhere you go. At some point, you talk about schizophrenia, which is a break from reality. You know, it's talking about that ego reality, which is the general of the psyche, which is based on, you know, the reality principle. So you break from reality, and you're no longer able to deal with it, so you're spending most of your time trying to find ways to compensate. Compensatory arrogance, substance abuse, you said, self-medicating. Most of these are just escaping behaviors, not just to escape what's going on in society, but to escape what's going on in myself, because I haven't really dealt with it, and there's when you reach out and try and find a means to deal with it, there's nobody who's willing to work with me in that process. So sometimes psychotherapy may be good, sometimes it's not, because a lot of, as Joy DeGuglieri said, I'm sure the doctor would agree, a lot of the psychotherapists are not astute and not informed on the dynamics of racism, white supremacy, what's going on in the black family. And most of the paradigms of psychotherapy are based on studies with white people. So many of those are not portable, and they're not transferable. They really don't apply to us. So many of us who do reach out find that there's nothing there, and then you have a higher suicide rate. Or just, again, that helplessness syndrome.
Agree. Go ahead.
You're absolutely correct on that. And, yeah, definitely, it's amazing because, you know, that's one of the things that I've spoken about in the past, whereas, you know, there have not been enough clinical studies in our community, but yet they earn that distrust. But we have to, eventually we're going to have to address that particular issue, not only with, you know, mental health care, but with other forms of health care as well. And we're going to have to get in there and eventually work with some of these people in clinical studies. Why aren't there, you know, a lot of black physicians carrying out these clinical studies as well? But, yeah, we need to be studied a little bit more because we do react differently to different situations. So you're absolutely correct. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I really, if I could jump in there and say that I really appreciate what you just brought to the table, and breaking it down the way that you did, because you really get it. You know, as a gestalt psychotherapist, all I am is a reality psychotherapist. And I'm one of those psychotherapists who, yes, in order for the person to be a whole person, I have to look at all those spectrums that you named, culturally, identification. I have to look at all of that. All of that comes into play. One of the things that I do is I go out and I teach the 16-hour supervision course, and I only want to teach that to experts, and I look for experts to teach that course to that understand exactly what you said, that when we get to that part where we're talking about you know, gender and ethics and that kind of thing, that I have to know before I give them that certification, that certificate, that you really have an understanding of what that person is bringing to the table. A lot of the people that are getting into our field right now are these young kids, and they came from the cornfields of Iowa. They cannot help you in Chicago at all. Do not understand that at all. And I really, really, I mean, I really get it. And some people might say, well, Dr. Bev, you're a little bit too raw. You can call me whatever you want, but you can always call me authentic, okay? Because shame is something that you cannot see directly. What stands out is what you pointed out, is the defensive behaviors. It's the drugs. It's the promiscuousness. It's the sex. When I see a little girl that she's 11, 12, 13 years old, I remember growing up. I'm 56. I remember growing up, and they'll say, oh, that's the fast girl. She's so fast. That's the fast girl in the neighborhood. Well, now what I understand, knowing what I know now, she wasn't fast. She was calling out for help. Something was going on in her family that was so shameful, that was so secretive, that this is how she acts out. In the chat room, which I don't see a whole lot of chatting going on, folks, I want to hear some replies on what this, from all this good information that's coming out here, okay? Because shame can't be seen directly. And what we're seeing is that little girl who we saw, we call Fast, and she's being sexual at an early age, something is going on. I can guarantee you, just like as you said, as an LCSW, we know it's some secrets, it's some shame, it's some guilt going out there. People, and when it comes to sex, drugs, and alcohol, I call it sex, drugs, and rock and roll, because people can put a whole lot of mixture of, you know, whatever into that. But what the deal is what they're trying to really tell us is that that's a call for help. To me, when I see someone overindulging, when I worked in substance abuse, I never met anybody that did drugs just because they didn't have anything else better to do.
Oh, yeah,
I
definitely.
I can guarantee you there was something else going on.
We have another call that we're going to pull into the conversation here. Area code 832, I believe this is Houston, Texas. Houston, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, I'm Stacy. Actually, I talked to you on your post Facebook.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, and I said I would chime in. My situation is a little bit, at least I'm coming from an actual experience point, and I just want to say how thankful I am that you are getting this out. This is one of those situations that need to be talked about that gets swept under the rug a lot. And personally, I know it growing up from having a mental ill parent. I grew up and my mother, she had what was called manic depression. And now it's referred to as bipolar disorder, and she had psychotic features. And she basically, like clockwork, would lose her mind every 2 years because she wouldn't take her medicine. And I just wanted to talk about the experience of how that was swept under the rug and how we weren't allowed to talk about it. And then when she would blow up, people in the community wouldn't understand it. And just the stigma that came along with that, and with me and my siblings being accused of devil worship and things like that, because there was literally no education about
exactly.
the situation. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what, you know, what we're talking about today, being able to go back into our homes, into our families, and our community, and
mm-hmm.
being able to educate and inform them about these things, because you're right. You'll hear people when they talk about mental illness, especially certain religious people or certain family members, and they'll call it demonic or an evil spirit, and you have a few that will try to lay their hands on you, if you will, and pray it away. You know, you've been put into the mindset that you can pray everything away. And, no,
exactly.
it takes more than just praying it away. In some cases, it takes therapy, it takes medication, it takes a lot of healing, because in the situation with the mom there, you know, what you were explaining to me was that every two years, she would have an episode.
Mm-hmm.
And you believe that she was doing that as a way of reaching out to your father. And
yes.
I just think that's sad, honey. And I'm sorry that you went through that.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it was. It, you know, there's a part of me, you know, as a child, you have that love for your parent. But sometimes, you know, I would just say some people shouldn't procreate, because it really never was about the children. It was about this dynamic with this relationship. And then my mother was abused herself. You know, and that's what I want to comment on, is it's like a tradition. It's like a culture of abuse that just goes on from one generation to the other generation, and nobody talks about it. And it's a shame to talk about it. And what's worse, for me and my brother and sister, we were blamed for a lot of it. We were just children, you know.
Hmm.
People would leave us in that situation, and my mother could get pretty dangerous. There were times she thought she was Jesus. You know, and we were tempting Jesus. I remember one time she beat us because we bought her, she gave us money. One of the senses is they would give away all their money, or just spend money that's euphoric feeling. Well, she gave us all her money, and we, you know, we were children. We went to the store, and we picked up some candy, and we picked up some juice, something that she really liked, and we brought it to her. And by this point, she's in her psychosis phase, and she beat us for tempting Jesus. She thought she was Jesus. And she jumped from church to church, and a lot of these, her church people would tell her, don't take her medicine. You know, that medicine is of the devil. And when she would, they would leave us in this situation, and when she would blow up and she's abusing us and doing all these things, because she doesn't know what's going on, because she's in some attempt for my father's attention, or she's believing in the church, nobody's around to pick up the pieces, you know, and we end up damaged, and we're still damaged. I mean, it's something you deal with for the rest of your life. It really is. I had to climb out of that hole myself. Nobody brought me out of that hole. And what I wanted to ask about, especially Dr. Bell, is when kids do reach out, because I was the mouthy one. I was the one everybody was against, because I did try to reach out and talk to people. But you have adults who don't want to listen to the children.
Okay.
You know,
exactly.
How do young people, when you have adults who don't want to listen to that, and who don't want to hear that and think that should be a secret kept within the family, how do they come out and how do they heal? Because I'm kind of lucky. I still have problems, but I'm kind of lucky. My brother isn't so lucky. He's out there on drugs. You know, my sister, you know, she's never been in a healthy relationship. She seeks out bad relationships with guys who are pretty much borderline mentally ill themselves. You know, yeah. So
did any of y'all get any counseling or therapy as adults?
I am, but that's another taboo in the community is therapy and getting counseling. That's for white folks. You know, or you go to church for your therapy.
And that's some of the, you know, that's some of the talk that you'll hear in the community, that counseling and therapy is for, you know, quote unquote white people. No, it's for us as well. The CSA project launched this year, and the CSA project, basically, it is to take the stigma off of mental illness in our community and encourage people to get the help. And I posted links before, and I'll find them and post them again today. And I won't do it immediately after show, but check later on tonight, in which it gives you information about different facilities that you can make an appointment with, so that you can get some free counseling. Now, it may be 2 months before you can get an appointment, but it's a free appointment, or it's on a sliding scale. They'll slide it to something that you can afford, like $20 or something like that. But that's not just for you, but for anyone who may need that additional help, you know, whether it's mental health care or even physical health care. And, you know, that information definitely is out there. And, you know, again, like as you said, you know, the after effects of all of that. You have your brother who's out there, you know, in drugs. It's amazing. I mean, these are things that definitely need to be addressed. And, you know, the adults that were blaming you, that's what I do not understand. You know, were they trying to blame you all because she had you, because she chose to have children? And that's another thing, you know, in our community. A lot of times, a lot of these parents force these young ladies to have these children against their will. They force them to have these children as a punishment, and that needs to stop as well. And I think I've seen it in my family and others. But, I mean, in your situation, did your family, were they trying to blame you all for her mental health care issues?
We had aunts because they didn't understand it. Her story pretty much was she was raised in the country and she was abused growing up. I mean, horrific stuff that I guess I can understand why she would be sick, you know, but I don't understand why she went on to. I guess it was expected to go on and get married and have children. Basically, it's what's expected. That's what's success. So her bipolar disorder hadn't manifested when she was at home. So when my dad would call and alert the family that this is happening to her, they didn't believe it. You know.
Right.
And of course, nobody talked about the abuse of why it could have happened or why she could have been so depressed, how this could have manifested. Nobody talked about that at all. You know, so and my dad wasn't really in the bed. I really believe my dad is a sociopath. So it was a terrible, honestly. People tell me I need to write a book. It was a terrible upbringing. And it's really disheartening when you're 31 years old and you're talking to someone because you think this is normal. This is what everybody goes through, and you find out, no, that's not normal. That's not what everybody goes through, that not everybody grows up abused or in abusive situations with their parents and being blamed for it. I mean, I was basically labeled a bad kid. I was supposed to have babies when I was 14. Just all kinds of things that my father put in the mind of my other aunts and uncles on his side. And then, of course, my mother's side blaming my father for whatever's going on with my mother, or just in plain denial that that's not happening. You know, that's never happened at home. The peculiar thing for me is how could my aunts or my mother help me when they were still in denial of the abuse that they endured? My aunt and my mother still communicated and referred to their stepfather who had tried to rape my mother, who had to pull a knife on them. He's still in their lives. They still refer to him as dad. So if you're still in that type of, I don't know, with Stockholm Syndrome, where you accept it and move on, he can't hurt me anymore, so let's not talk about it, how do you develop the skills to protect your own children from it? Or do you even want to protect your own children from it? I decided for myself that's not how I want to live, and I did not want to bring children into that to have to go through that. I didn't want my daughter to have to sit up one day and think everybody in the world was molested or everybody in the world had mental illness and was accused of devil worship. And, you know, everybody in the world, aunts and uncles, hate them or think they are bad kids. You know, just genetically bad kids. You know, so.
So, yeah, you wanted to change. You wanted to change.
I did.
You and your family.
I watched the world around me, and I, even though I thought everybody went through the same thing, just kept it quiet, I just knew that it was a place I wanted to get to where I didn't have to be unhappy every day or depressed all the time or not like myself.
Hmm.
You know?
Exactly.
Or that fear that I'm going to lose my mind myself. You know? So I had to educate myself on that because I just thought it was something that happened.
Excellent. And it's good that you're educating yourself and that you're getting the help that you need. And that you decided that you did not want your children to have to deal with those issues and you want it better for them. And so you decided to make a change. And that's, you know, wonderful. And, you know, as you know, basically you were telling your story, someone in the chat room was talking about how their dad has schizophrenia and no one helped him. And in your family, no one helped your mother. And even in my family, I have different family members that have issues. And no one helped them. Not only did they not help the individual that was, you know, experiencing mental illness, they didn't help the children of that individual. And so those children suffered. And that's another secret. And they turned around and went to point the finger at the children like your family did you and say that, well, it must be the kid's fault. What did you do to set her off? What
exactly.
It's always someone else's fault, but they don't want to take into consideration that this person has real issues that need to be addressed. Why don't we, as a family, collectively talk about what's happening, talk to the individual, so maybe, you know, put together an intervention, and if need be, put this person, you know, admit them, have them admit it, and the family takes care of the children and, you know, basically in some cases cover the cost so that this person won't lose their home or apartment while they're getting the help that they need. That's what family used to be. Family used to be we would come together and sit down and talk about these issues and try to work it out. Something happened. Something has changed. And, you know, I'm just personally, I'm not understanding. But, yeah, honey, you didn't do anything wrong, and you were not the cause of, you know, your mom's situation. And, again, you even admitted that your mom did not take her medicine. So, you know, your mom was culpable to a point because she knew if she did not take her medicine that she would have, you know, an episode. So your mom was bipolar, so she probably was, you know, having manic episodes or mixed episodes. And, you know, we don't talk about a lot of that in the community. And we need to definitely, you know, educate people and define it because, again, as you were talking about the irresponsibility with her finances, and, you know, another aspect to that is, another symptom to that is, you know, hypersexuality. You know, a lot of things that happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, it needs to be addressed.
Yeah. Yeah. The hypersexuality, yeah, that can be taken advantage of by a lot of people who don't understand it. I mean, I've had friends who pretty much, the thing is about abuse and usually being kept quiet in the community is that somehow the girls or the guys, we all find each other. It's, you know, especially in that, if you're in that community, it just amazed me how so many of my friends have been in situations where they were molested or raped or had to deal with a mentally ill parent and had to deal with just, you know, trauma from the community itself, not let alone the family, you know. You have the family who's in denial and doesn't help, and then you have the community who doesn't understand, and when you try to explain it to them, they don't want to hear you. You know, they just want to make up the situation and tell you what's wrong with you. Oh, y'all are full of the devil, or you were born wrong. There was even one lady in our community, she had mental disorder too, and they had said it was because she married a white guy. This is just how ignorant.
Superstition. It's very superstitious also.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a child yourself and trying to explain and stand up for yourself, it's hard to, when you have that thick cloud of ignorance under superstition, you know, it's very hard for a kid to fight that. And I was a fighting kid, and that's why I wasn't liked very much, you know. You weren't going to sit here and blame me or whatever, and when I, that was called talking back, because I was like 13 when I really started to come out of that shell and say, okay, enough is enough. I'm not this bad kid. You're not going to do this to me. You know, I'm not going to keep my mouth shut. Of course, I get slapped in the mouth for it, but it got to a point where I just like, I'm not going to let you beat me down and make me responsible. So I knew I wasn't responsible for my mother's problems, you know.
Yeah. So I'm listening and I hear a lot of scapegoating, particularly on the part of the adults, onto the children, which were the most vulnerable in the family unit. A lot of projection on their part, projecting their negativity onto the children. And also in terms of the family unit, I'm sure the doctor will confirm that usually the person who is acting out the most, ironically, that person is usually the one who is probably the most likely to get help. The one who is really has these overt symptoms, you know, the presenting complaint, and sometimes the family will bring the child in and say, this child is acting out inappropriately. You know, again, the scapegoat, you know, but it's usually that child which, in terms of family therapy, indicates that, as the doctor said, you really need to have, it's a family disease. When an interventionist just focuses on individuals at a time, you're never going to get the full picture, and particularly if you have an outpatient-type setting, the child is going back into the family setting. The child has just about as much chance as a snowball in hell. If you're talking to the child, you're getting feedback from the parents who themselves are steeped in these rationalizations and justifications for the behavior. So you have all these mechanisms of defense going on at the same time. It's a really toxic negative synergism, and the child is the one who's caught in the crossfire. You know, so I think that's really important sometimes, particularly when it comes to the children. The adults, they have a somewhat volitional, they have an opportunity to go and perhaps seek help on their own. But sometimes I think it's important to really consider taking the child out of that environment, because you have a codependence. Exactly. The children are not, and that's another word is really important, I'm sure, you know, codependent relationship. And the child usually bears the brunt of it.
May I jump in there? This is Dr. Bev. One of the things I want to correct, first of all, is that I'm D-R-B-E-V. There is no period in the middle. I do not have a doctorate, okay? That's the name of my business, which is my brand, Dr. Bev.
Sorry.
Mental Health.
Yes,
so
yes,
just
yes.
Call me, I'm Dr. Bev, all one word. But what I wanted to agree with you so much, and when you said scapegoating, and I almost leaped out of the chair, because you are exactly right. I look for the scapegoats to come into my office. I look for that parent who, they may be mentally ill, they may be dysfunctional or whatever, but when they bring that child into your office and say, well, if you fix this one, then everything else in the family is going to be okay, then I know, thank goodness, because this is the one, young lady, as Kim said to you, I commend you. I commend you for being on this program and speaking your truth. Many people may be listening to this and thinking, oh, well, this just started happening. You know, she's just one of a few. But no, you are not. You are not. You are very similar to why I got into this profession. Okay? And I'm going to short story. Met a young lady. I worked in higher education at the time. Met a young lady who had ACE, SATs and ACTs at the time, had maxed out the scores. But what I found out in visiting her during her 11th, and it wasn't really until her 12th grade year, that I found out that her and her 16-year-old brother had ran, the brother was 18, she was 16, that ran away. Their mother was schizophrenic. And nobody in their family would take these kids. They would see the mother do such atrocious things. For instance, when the child, the young lady that I ended up helping, was 6 months old, the mother was in one of her psychotic features. She used that baby's back as an ashtray all night long.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, can you imagine the screaming that was going on? When the brother would go, you know, the family lived, you know, it's old-fashioned. You know, everybody kind of lived in the same community. Do you know nobody wanted to get involved? Nobody, and it's the same thing that happens with child abuse. So I want to say to you, first of all, I applaud you for your courage. for speaking out, because you're speaking out for somebody else that's in, that's listening to this, or that will listen to this broadcast, because Kim's numbers are off the chart for people who listen to this broadcast after we go off the air. And we are, you are helping one of those people who are now an adult. And they, and as an adult, they, like you, you know, they question themselves. You know, like, where am I going to find help? Well, one of the reasons why I developed this Dr. Bev Mental Health Counseling is because it's a VIP service. I can do it by Skype. I can do it by telephone. I can do it by however we want to do it to help you get to wherever you want to be. Even Kim.
And that's a wonderful thing. Definitely mental health care, you know, across the board needs to be, again, advocated for in our community. And that's the reason why, you know, I'm happy. You know, I'm thrilled that the young lady called in. She's sharing her story. We've had others call in the past to share their stories. We did another show, Depression in the Church, and you may want to take a listen to that as well. But definitely, you know, that's out there. And, again, we have to combat the stigma. We have to combat these stigmas, and we have to encourage one another to become educated, and we have to educate one another in these matters too. That's the reason why you see certain posts on my Facebook wall, and you're following me on Twitter. Definitely, I put it out on Twitter as well, because we definitely need to address that, and you'll also hear us talk a lot about drug and alcohol abuse, mental health care issues, physical abuse, you know, whether it's sexual, physical, or emotional. You know, these are all things that definitely need to be addressed. And again, a lot of this is covered up in our community, and it needs to be addressed. It needs, you know, the people that have been victimized, they need, you know, they need help. And they don't need other people running around pointing the finger at them and making them feel bad about a situation that they had absolutely no control over.
Exactly.
And then in some of them, you know, they now have issues as well. You know, we have to stop pointing the finger. If we see someone else doing it, we need to challenge that individual that's trying to ridicule and mock people, because there's nothing cute or funny about it. These are very real issues, and that's the reason why a lot of people turn into, you know, recluses, or they try to be, you know, basically they try to move into the background so that they're not noticed. And, you know, and many of them, they don't necessarily want to go out and get the help because of the stigma that's out there. And we have to stop it. We have to stop it. These things need to be addressed. There is no such thing as an image, if you will, you know, as far as, like, you know, many of these families. And, again, we haven't even gotten to the religious part yet. Not really, but these families trying to keep up the family image, and trying to keep up a family standing in the community. And, you know, again, you know, it goes beyond that, because with each subsequent generation, if these issues aren't addressed, there's a really good chance it's going to get worse. I'm talking in general, because there are some people, like this young lady, who decided enough is enough, no more, I'm going to go and get the help that I need, because they didn't want their children to experience the guilt and the shame, and, you know, as they were speaking earlier, the projection, and, you know, also the codependency that comes along with that. And it's just, it's amazing. But, you know, again, yeah, we definitely applaud her for, you know, making the first step, addressing it, talking about it, taking the steps needed and necessary for her to be productive, for her to be focused, because she's not going to be able to be healthy and be a great mother to her children if she can't help herself first. And that also needs to be addressed in our community, because a lot of women, especially women in our community, we are taught to help everyone else before we help ourselves. And you are no good to anyone else if you cannot help yourself. So, yes, definitely we need to do that.
Yeah. It's really therapeutic to actually talk about it. Not only does it feel good to get it out there and be able to have an audience where people can understand you, is it that the hope that you can help give somebody else courage to step up? Because, you know, the silence and the shame, I mean, it's murder on your whole life. It's murder on your whole psyche, your whole outlook.
You know, and I just decided for myself I had to get out of that. And I do. I try to help others. You know, I have, like I said, I've ran into friends and we all flock together. And I had some that I tried to help and others who, even though they know that happened to them, it's just a part of life. So, you know, they're just going to get by. It happened, whatever, forget about it. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Exactly.
You know?
And we have to deal with that as well because you'll hear people say things like, well, just get over it.
Yeah.
There are some things that you can't just necessarily get over. And we have to stop that. We have to start addressing these issues. We have to show more compassion, show more understanding. You know. I don't know what has happened to us because it used to be a point in time where we would reach out to people that we know were having difficulties and we would try to help them to the best of our ability or at least direct them to a resource that could assist them. And now it's like, you know, selfishness. It's amazing, you know. But, yeah, honey, you know, definitely, you know, we commend you. And, I mean, when you reached out on Facebook, you know, I definitely, you know, wanted to chat with you a little bit. And, you know, you said you were going to call in. And I'm glad you shared your story because it's important for other people to know that they're definitely not alone out here, that there are many people that have gone through these particular situations. And, you know, that there's help out there. There are people out here who care.
And there's no shame in it. There's no shame in getting help. No shame in admitting it, and there's no shame in seeking it. And that's one of the main things we got to put out there, because it's that shame that will keep you from it, that very same shame.
Exactly.
That was placed upon you, exactly.
Yeah, exactly, due to no fault of your own, so... Sounds like you're making tremendous progress. So, you know, we're definitely proud of you.
I'm taking it day by day.
That's how you do that. You know, you take it one day at a time, one issue, one situation at a time. But, I mean, you know, as you know, you have a goal in mind, and you're trying to reach that particular goal. And that's fantastic. That's absolutely fantastic, honey.
Thank you.
And I'm your friend. You know, I'm just glad that, you know, you had the courage and the conviction to call the show and to, you know, not only share it on Facebook, you know, your situation and your issues and on Facebook, but also, you know, on the show today because, you know, people needed to know. People needed to hear that. Exactly.
Thank you so much. There's a lot more than where that comes from, but I just, you know, strictly for the topic, it's the mental illness. And amazingly, now it's probably for another show, how the religion does come into play with that. You got a whole nother story on that it just will blow your mind.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we still have about 28 minutes left, and one of the other questions that I had on my list here is, does this explain the codependency on religion? And when I'm talking about is the black community depressed, and then the follow-up question to that was, does this explain the codependency on religion? Does this explain some of the pathology that we see in our community in regards to religion? And it's a lot of psychology that goes along with this. And when we try to explain it to people, they kind of ignore it, they'll blow it off, but there's a lot more to this than what meets the eye.
Yeah.
Well, if I may make a comment, I think that's an excellent topic, because I think religion, particularly in the black community, how we've been indoctrinated to practice it through our oppression, is that suffering is a virtue, and being a martyr is a virtue, and setting healthy boundaries and holding people accountable is not. And I think primarily relative to us, so we can, instead of being proactive, being a change agent in our lives, and perhaps other people's, like you, the lady was seeking to reach out to other people to partner with them and trying to change things and be proactive, but they seemingly were not up to the mark. So she helps you. That's, it seemed like that's what you were doing. You were looking for people to coalesce with to empower yourselves, but the other people were not, they didn't have the same energy or aura that you had, so you had to disengage from them. And yeah, I think I've just shared my experience. I went through that, and every time, particularly I had a drinking problem years ago, and I went to AA, and they constantly were talking about the ego being a bad thing. And the best way to overcome it was to be selfless and help other people. But, well, what about me? Well,
right.
What about my needs? What about, you know, my neglect? So now I am full-blown into this altruism. And I say to you that there's no such thing as altruism. I mean, you're getting something out of it, whether if it's not monetary, then it's emotional, psychological. But ultimately, the goal of a healthy relationship with myself and other people, even if I feel like I don't deserve it, is reciprocity. And sometimes I had to force myself when I was coming out of my low self-esteem mode and that self-abnegation mode. I had to force myself to hold people accountable. If I gave you something, if I spent time on the phone listening to you talk, then you know what? I forced myself to call you. You need to listen to me talk now. But in the church,
right.
They were saying, in the church, they would tell you, agape, unconditional love, no such thing. That's not love if somebody's using you up, your time, and say, it's not money, but people are calling you on the phone, and you're listening to all their problems, but then when you want to say something, I got to go. That's abuse.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's abuse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very, very much so. I've had to deal with that issue, you know, and listening to people and listening and offering solutions, in some cases linking them to other people that can help them, and I mean literally doing the research for these individuals. And this was for some people in my life and who are no longer in my life, because when I needed them. Now, mind you, you know, I didn't need them necessarily to listen to my problems or what have you, but I had a situation where I had a medical emergency, and, you know, I almost died. I came home, and I was home, and I called up one friend, and I was on the phone with her, and I was so upset. It was like there was a frog in my throat. I couldn't even speak. I couldn't drink water. I couldn't see anything. I was just that upset because of what had happened to me. And basically, I told this individual, I said, I can't talk right now. This is just too much. And this was like either the same day or the day after I came home from the hospital. And I said, wait a few days. Call me back. Just check on me. I didn't ask them to bring me any meals. I didn't ask them to wire me any money. I didn't ask them to send me food via Peapod. I didn't ask for anything. All I wanted was a phone call in a few days just to check on me, to make sure that I was okay. And that was in 2009, and I'm still waiting on that call.
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, basically I saw that individual online, and then I've seen them subsequently at a funeral, as a matter of fact, for a mutual relative. And I saw them, and I told them, when I saw them online, I said, and this is why you don't know very much about me. This is why I don't come around when you all invite me to things, because you all, it seems as though I'm in this by myself. And I said, there's no need to respond to this instant message. I wish you the best and have a good life. And I have absolutely nothing to say. But with the religious people, some of the religious associates, mutual associates we have, they told me that I needed to forgive. I needed to forgive and forget.
That hurts. I've had that happen. That hurts.
It does.
That really hurts.
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, again, they want you to keep it secret because they don't want you telling people why you decided to sever the relationship. And so it's just, it's amazing. Some of the religious responses to things, totally outrageous. Again, you know, with some of these secrets that we were talking about earlier today, and, you know, even with some of the things that we haven't even addressed, because we're just scratching the surface here, some of the responses are, touch not mine anointed, or judge not. Those are the religious answers that you'll get, especially if the pastor or someone in leadership is conducting themselves in a way that they shouldn't behave. In order for them to cover it up, they'll try to come at you with those particular scriptures there. But in addition to that, or they'll say something like, you're just jealous. Or they'll try to call you what is unchurched, and a lot of different things like that, just trying to cover up what's being, you know, done in these churches. And, you know, again, one of the things I was asking was, you know, does the church owe the congregation an apology? Does the leadership in the church owe the congregation an apology? Because they know they are covering up quite a bit. There are pastors out there in the pulpit every Sunday that are free thinkers, that are atheists, that are non-believers. We have the clergy project, and there are a lot of pastors joining that project. There have been several pastors that have come out at different conventions, you know, especially this year. We had a couple that came out, and they left the ministry, and now they're in the, you know, free thought community. My God, somebody got a buzz going on back there with their phone, but definitely, you know, it's happening. I'm not sure. Let's see here. Let me put you on hold here.
Okay.
But no, definitely, you know, and these are things that definitely need to be addressed, and, you know, with the religious answers. But yeah, it's a lot of things that are happening, you know, with, you know, the religious speakers as well, and it intersects with, like, some of the family members. Because a lot of that religious thinking, that religiosity, has spilled over into our family. So it goes back to shame and guilt and the embarrassment, you know. And, you know, many of these people, especially in these churches, you know, with the pastors and the people in leadership, they're trying to hold on to their power, their wealth, their money, their image. And they're also trying to hold on to their dynasty because, again, it has turned into a dynasty. They're passing the church to their children, just like their father passed it to them and their grandfather passed it to them. And it's just interesting. They've created their own little dynasties and fiefdom on earth while they're telling the rest of you to accept your rewards and your treasures in heaven. And like I said earlier, you know, with Jesse Jackson telling people to keep hope alive, the only hope that he's keeping is hoping that you don't catch on to their scam.
It's a racket. It is. Yes, it is. It's a racket.
Exactly. And when we try to educate people on this, and again, you know, to me, some of this is very gray. It's a very gray area, and to me, it's kind of a dangerous area because, again, if we kind of guide people away from some of their religious ideology or what have you, it's my question is, the ones that are codependent on religion, are they going to return back to the behavior that they walked away from, whether it's drugs, alcohol, sex, just a number of different issues? Because, again, with that codependency transference, you know, they may no longer be an addict of some sort, but they've turned that addiction from the drugs and alcohol to their addiction to religion. So, you know, the event that they walk away from their religion, are they going to return to the drugs and alcohol? But how can we circumvent that? What can we do to help them so that they don't feel as though they have to go back to the drugs and alcohol to soothe whatever pain or soothe whatever they're trying to clear up in their lives? And again, that is why I'm glad that we're trying to combat the business of mental health care, because again, if we can get to the root of the cause and help these people get the help that they need and to be productive individuals, I believe that they can live very healthy, happy lives.
You made an excellent point. I know that a lot of people who are subs, you know, adult children of alcoholics, ACOA, perhaps you heard of John Bradshaw out of Texas, a psychologist who does a lot of work with inner child work. And usually for a lot of us, those issues have to do with unresolved trauma from childhood. So basically, and one thing I don't necessarily agree with it, but I know that you're familiar with it, is that in substance abuse treatment, they say that period of time where you picked up the substance is where you stopped growing emotionally and psychologically. To some extent, that's true. So therefore, you have an adult who's functioning emotionally from the perspective of a child, impulse control problems, a lack of developing coping skills, lack of, obviously, or you wouldn't be acting out inappropriately if we did have those coping skills. So, in terms of healing and finding the solutions, it's important that we realize that it is okay to have these problems. You know, again, that's the forgiveness of self. If I'm going to forgive anyone, it's self first. It's always about, and it's not selfish to be self-preserving. That's the first law of nature, is self-preservation.
Right.
You know, and that's been weeded out of us in the church. And what you said, one thing about the church is, everywhere else, they talk about patriarchy being a bad thing. They talk about, in the real world, patriarchy is a bad, particularly white male patriarchy is a bad thing. The church is based on big I's and little U's, a very dichotomous black and white type existence. There's no room for gray, and most of reality is gray. So
yeah,
they're not,
exactly.
It's either bad or good. It's this very dichotomous idealization or negative denigration. It's either one or the other, the devil or God, heaven or hell. So you can't reason with a person like that. They're very, very hard and fast when it comes to trying to deal with reality. But that isn't reality.
Exactly. Very much so, a reality. And, you know, it has to be dealt with. And, you know, going back to, you know, tying all of that in together, you know, going back to the family.
Mm-hmm.
If you have someone who comes to you in your family, or you know several people in your family that's having, you know, some issues, you know, you all spend the money to have a family reunion every year. Why don't you do a family healing every year? Where people get and talk about your issues. Well, you know, Uncle Joe over there, you know, you said this to me and it hurt my sister. But Uncle Joe should be able to sit down and discuss with you, you know, man to woman or man to man or what have you, and tell you, you know, maybe he didn't mean it that way. Maybe you misunderstood. Why can't we just sit down and have a family meeting and talk about these issues and get together and, okay, you're having issues over here with this. All right, what can we do collectively as a family? You need to go back to a family unit and help one another through some of these issues, especially in today's economy. You know, we have people out here that are homeless, that are unemployed, underemployed. I've never seen numbers like this, and I've never seen situations like this ever. And, you know, I've been on this earth for 41 years, and I've never seen anything like this. I mean, we've all suffered in our own ways. You know, those that are therapists, you know, you've seen your clientele. People can't afford to come see you anymore. You know, there are people losing their homes, and it's just, it's a lot of issues. You know, we haven't even talked about the financial thing, you know, going on in our community. You know, people losing their homes, their jobs. People taking out these loans that are, you know, being hounded by that. You know, people committing suicide because of their student loans. They can't pay them back. They can't pay them back. They can't find a job. So it's just a number of things that, you know, we definitely need to address. But, again, going back to the family unit, you know, we sit down and we laugh at the family reunion and everybody wants to do the family prayer and all of that. And besides the family fight, it seems like almost every family reunion has a fight of some sort. Instead of fight, I can't wait to hear you.
Ken, why are you talking about my family like that?
I get a ringside seat at my family gathering. Just sit back and watch them and just act the old fools, just act a fool. Yeah.
You know, another time they can do it besides the family reunion, everybody wants to get together for Thanksgiving, because that's like, a, you know, another type of family reunion. When you're sitting around talking about what you're thankful for or what you're grateful for, why can't you say, I'm grateful for you, although, you know, why can't you all put it on the table? Why can't you put it out there on the table and discuss these issues? We spend time with each other, and especially the black family, you know, we always like to say how close we are and, you know, how we're there for one another. But in my situation, just, you know, and I know in a few other people's situations, the people that have hurt me the most, the people that have mistreated me the most, have been family. I've had strangers treat me better than my family. How's that about?
That's true for me, too.
Martin,
you know, and they would have aided woman on that one, too. Yeah.
My first experience with racism was in my family, you know, who's lighter, who's darker. The lighter ones got preferential treatment. Yeah.
Paperback,
yeah. Yeah, I mean,
that's
that was my very, you know, you black
yes.
this, you black that, you nappy-headed this. You know, it took me a long time to heal. And it was hard for me to get angry at white people when, at least when I went outside of the home, they at least treated me with some respect and dignity.
Exactly.
It was hard for me to see white people's prejudice because the bigotry I was experiencing from my own black people was so egregious. yeah.
And how
right.
confusing is that? You know, you're telling me this is my enemy, but you are treating me
exactly
as the enemy. You know, it's so confusing.
Yes, it is.
Exactly. And that's a future show, and we're going to be talking about self-hate and self-hating in our community, just like the one topic when I was asked, is the black community depressed? And does this explain the codependency on religion? That's a future show as well. And, you know, that self-hate we have issues of colorism, like you all were just talking about, in our community, it definitely it needs to be addressed because how, you know, in all honesty, how can we address racism with other cultures and other races when we haven't addressed the racism and the self-hate within
talk
our own community?
Exactly. Exactly.
And so
especially when you have biracial people in your family, like I have biracial kids, they haven't really had to go through much of what I had to go through with me and my brother being dark and my sister being the light skin and my father being the light skin. And she received preferential treatment. A lot of people would compare our beauty. A lot of people would be like, oh, I can't even believe that's your sister simply based on skin color. It's crazy.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, we've had that, you know, that happens in a lot of families, you know, and I'm sure you're familiar with that. Another thing we have to deal with, and which I find really interesting, is in a lot of our families, with some of the people that, you know, have the lighter skin or maybe they have a softer gaze pattern in their hair, you know, you hear a lot of blacks saying, well, we have Indian in our family. But they don't want to talk. Yeah, you know, but then, you know, with Henry Louis Gates, with his, you know, genealogy expedition, his program that he's been bringing forth, a lot of those people have Caucasian in their family.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a lot of things that definitely need to be brought to the forefront, because that's another family secret. You know, in a lot of our cases, we did, you know, the family tree and we really went through and did the genealogical, you know, trace back. We find that we have a lot of different races and cultures in our family. You know, even with me, with my last name, Gill, you know, have a lot of black relatives in Mississippi, but we have a whole bunch of white ones, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, it's just interesting.
You know...
Go ahead, huh?
Yes. You know, when I have family members like that, and they would always talk about my great-grandmother, you know, who was born in Wyoming, and her hair was so long, she used to be able to sit on it. I was wondering, you know, why? What relevance did that have in terms of her worth as a human being? And then later on, I started studying about the Native American tribes. Many of them, particularly the five civilized tribes that fought on the side of the Confederacy, most of them own slave, black slaves themselves. There are a few, like the Seminoles, who maybe didn't, and maybe, actually, I think there was the Cherokees at one point fought along with the black Cherokees against whites, but those were few and far between. The vast majority of the Native American tribes also owned slaves and wanted to emulate the whites in turn. That's why they called them civilized. They emulated the worst characteristics that we identify as being white, one of which is segregation and owning slaves. So when I bring that to black people, some of my family members' attention, I don't want to be Native American. Part of me loving myself is renouncing, trying not to escape my Africanicity. That's why I embrace it so totally. You know, I don't say, even if I do have white blood, you know, that has no relevance really in terms of how I'm treated. Nobody says, well, he's 30% white. We treat him better. Nobody does that. So I embrace my black identity 100% because that's the only way in terms of me accepting myself totally. I don't give myself an excuse or a way out of my blackness. So I've got 30%, so therefore I feel better about myself. No, I'm black. That simple.
Exactly.
I'm black.
Exactly. And not only did, you know, they have slaves themselves, they were also paid to return the runaway slaves. They would catch the runaway slaves.
$20, I think they got. $20 per slave.
Oh, my goodness. Just some education.
Yeah, $20 per slave. They were the first bounty hunters. They were the first bounty hunters in Native America.
Wow. Exactly. It's just it's interesting, like you were saying, with the Cherokee and basically with the family talking about the relatives, the hair so long. In my family, they got pictures. They showed me a picture of, you know, my so-called grandmother, and her hair was down her back, and she was very, very dark with blue eyes. And I'm like, where did this come from? I'm like, you know, what Hallmark, you know, card? Did you talk to
Lord have mercy.
You know, but you can't really say that to your family because you're asking for a beat down if you do that.
Oh, Lord.
Exactly.
You know, like what picture frame did you keep that from, you know? And so this, the whole thing is just, it's interesting, you know, and we got to get better. We got to do better. And that's why, you know, I'm grateful for the Food Thought community and us having this show and us being able to go out and in the education and the information to, you know, the community as a whole, whether you're a believer or a non-believer, because in the Food Thought community, we do accept believers, and because there are some believers that basically, it's just, it's really interesting, but yeah, that's one of the things that I'm truly grateful for as far as being a part of this community, that we can get these issues out and put it on the table and discuss them and talk about it civilly. So it doesn't turn into, you know, a screaming fest. It doesn't turn into a situation where as people walk away from the show feeling worse than they did before they start listening to the show. That's not what we want. We want people to learn. We want people to ask questions. We want them to call in and share their stories or even ask questions because, you know, again, we had a couple of experts on the show today that could answer some of your questions, and, you know, that happens, you know, periodically from time to time. I mean, take advantage of it. Take advantage of it. Call in, ask your questions, but most importantly, we want you to heal, and hopefully you'll be able to help at least one person in your life. And, you know, when people ask me how can they aid me for whatever, what I may have, you know, helped them with, and I say, I don't need for you to do anything for me. What I want you to do is to go and help someone else. And I think that should be our mission as individuals, to be able to go out and help someone else become a productive or a more productive individual. I think, you know, as a humanist, you know, I care about people in general, and I just want to see the best for you, you know. So, I mean, we've come a long way, and we have a long way to go, but it seems as though a lot of people are waking up, not only waking up from the religiosity, but also waking up from the dysfunction. The dysfunction in lives, the dysfunction in our families. And so, again, you know, again, our motto here is we are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. You could leave to convert you, not convert you, Paul, but say we are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself. Open up your mind. Think. Use those critical thinking skills. Use that ration. You know, be rational. Get out there. Ask questions. There's nothing wrong with asking questions. And most importantly, I want you to know that there is nothing wrong with, you know, making a mistake. We all fail at some point in our lives, in several points in our lives. I mean, I've had some, you know, some failures in my life. But what did I do? I learned from it. Exactly. So I knew what not to do the next time. It's okay to be human. It's okay to be human. It's okay to make mistakes. But ask questions. There's someone out here that can answer your questions. With religion and especially with that religiosity mindset, a lot of these people have been taught to not question anything or anybody. That is backwards thinking. That is wrong thinking.
Just dogma. Just dogma.
Sorry. No, honey, go ahead. You know,
no, I just said that's, you know, just dogma. That's they don't live, you know, they're just living by dogma. And don't question anything, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
I agree.
Exactly. Oh yeah, and we have to get past that. We have to question everything. You know, anything that I say on this show, I invite people to go out and research it. You know, even call into the show. If I say something that's incorrect, call in and correct it. That is not an issue because I'm learning like everyone else. And we're all learning together.
Yes.
And we're learning from one another. And it's okay. It's okay to be corrected. It's okay to construct criticism, to give it as well as to receive it. So, again, you know, we want to let you guys know how much we love you, we support you, and we're all in this journey together. We're all trying to, you know, heal. We're trying to heal, trying to become more productive. We're trying to get out here and help these children. There's one minister here in Chicago that, you know, even though you know, some of us have issues but this gentleman is trying to raise funds to open a recreation center. I am able to look past his ideology because he's trying to do something for the children in the neighborhood. And, you know, I would love for us to have our own recreation center to help the children out. But until we get that, you know, I'm definitely going to show some support for this gentleman because, again, it's about these babies. It's about helping subsequent generations. It's easier to raise a child than it is to heal an adult. And those are our words for today. So thank you, callers. Thank you, everybody that called in. I thank the people in the chat room, the people listening in, the people who are going to listen to the archives. I truly appreciate you. Next Saturday, Reason, Science, and Skepticism with Raina Rose. So until then, you all have a lovely weekend. It was a privilege and an honor to speak with each and every last one of you today. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
All right.
It's wonderful.